Welcome to our deep dive into Kent Hodges' Industrializing Nigeria.
Releasing Nigeria's Energy.
Right. Releasing Nigeria's Energy. This book is...
It's quite something.
It's quite something. It really is. Yeah. It blends economic analysis with a really fascinating personal story.
Yeah. It's a good read.
Let's jump right in.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that's so fascinating about Kent Hodge is that he doesn't fit the typical mold of like your, you know, sort of buttoned up economist. You know what I mean?
Right.
He and his wife, Ruth, left their home in Australia and have spent a significant amount of time in Nigeria dedicating themselves to gospel work and economic empowerment.
Yeah. It's not every day you find someone with a background in finance who ends up founding a Bible college in Nigeria.
That's right.
Yeah.
He worked alongside Bishop Benson Idahosa.
Oh, wow.
Who was a world-renowned charismatic preacher before establishing the Christian Faith Institute in JC. And so you can definitely see how this blend of faith and economics shapes his perspective in the book.
Okay, so Hodge starts by tackling the issue of deindustrialization in Nigeria.
Yes.
And he makes a pretty bold claim, arguing that it was a deliberate strategy by global powers to keep Nigeria economically dependent.
Yeah, he points to the 1974 Kissinger Report as evidence. And this document, which was initially secret, outlined a geopolitical strategy aimed at preventing certain nations, including Nigeria, from industrializing the bill to ensure access to their resources for richer countries.
So if a nation can't produce its own goods, they have to rely on imports.
Exactly.
And that keeps those in control of global trade very happy.
Precisely. Hodge argues that this strategy was put into practice through things like the Structural Adjustment Program in the 1980s. These programs, often backed by the International Monetary Fund, forced developing countries to open their financial borders,
right,
leading to foreign acquisition of domestic industries, asset stripping, and increased reliance on imports.
I'm picturing Hodge arriving in Nigeria around that time, 1986, right in the thick of these sweeping changes.
Yeah.
He witnessed the impact firsthand while working with Bishop Idahosa. It really puts his perspective into context.
It does. And this leads him to his next big point, which is debt slavery.
Okay.
He draws heavily on John Perkins's book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Right.
Which describes how nations can be trapped in crippling debt through manipulative lending practices.
Perkins, as an insider, really exposed those tactics used to benefit foreign corporations and investors.
Right.
At the expense of developing nations.
Yes.
It's like a system designed to keep these countries in a constant state of financial dependence.
That's the core of Hodge's argument. He even delves into the shadowy world of groups he calls Gladio Left Behind Units. He claims these groups, often with ties to intelligence agencies, were used to destabilize nations and further specific economic interests.
Wait, hold on. Gladio Left Behind Units. Can you give me a bit more context on that? It sounds like something out of a spy novel.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The term Gladio refers to a network of clandestine organizations that operated in Europe during the Cold War. Often engaging in covert operations to counter Soviet influence, Hodge argues that similar units were used in other parts of the world, including Africa, to manipulate political and economic landscapes. He even cites a recent example involving a failed coup attempt in Congo that was linked to Western intelligence operatives.
So Hodge is suggesting that these covert operations were used to create chaos.
Yes.
And exploit resources.
That's his argument. And it ties directly into the issue of offshore banking, which he sees as another mechanism for siphoning wealth out of Africa. Hodge claims that hundreds of billions of dollars funds that could be used for development are stashed away in these secretive accounts, effectively robbing nations like Nigeria of their rightful resources.
Hundreds of billions. That's a staggering amount.
It is.
Now, I'm curious, if that money were actually invested back into the African continent, what kind of impact could it have?
Well, that's a question Hodge explores in detail. He believes it could be transformative, leading to significant improvements in infrastructure, education, healthcare, overall economic well-being.
It makes you wonder if these missing billions are part of the reason why Nigeria, with all its potential, still faces so many economic challenges.
It's a compelling argument, and it's a great example of how Hodge connects seemingly disparate issues, deindustrialization debt, covert operations offshore banking, into a larger narrative of economic exploitation.
And remember, this is coming from someone who could have easily been a part of that system.
Right.
But instead, he chose a different path, working alongside figures like Bishop Idahosa and dedicating himself to uplifting others.
Right. It definitely adds weight to his critique. It's like he's saying, I've seen how the system works from the inside, and it's not working for the people.
This leads us to a particularly provocative part of the book.
Yes.
Hodges' take on the climate change narrative.
Yeah.
He's quite skeptical of what he sees as the prevailing agenda.
Yeah, he doesn't hold back. He compares it to the oil scarcity scare tactics of the 1970s, which ultimately proved to be exaggerated. Hodge argues that the current focus on carbon dioxide reduction, while ignoring the potential of nuclear energy and other solutions, actually hinders development in countries like Nigeria.
Okay, I can see how this might be controversial.
Yeah.
So what specifically does he propose as an alternative?
He makes a compelling case for nuclear power, particularly newer, safer technologies. He even uses the Republic of Niger as an example, arguing that a single nuclear power station there could unlock vast artesian water reserves, transforming the nation's agricultural sector and impacting the entire West African region.
So one nuclear power plant
Yeah.
could trigger a ripple effect of positive change.
Exactly. But Hodge argues that the current focus on reducing carbon emissions prevents this kind of development, keeping nations trapped in energy poverty.
This is where he starts to connect this climate change narrative
Yes.
to the broader themes of control and exploitation we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
He seems to view it as yet another tool used to limit the economic potential of developing nations.
You're picking up on a key element of Hodge's analysis. He's not denying the existence of climate change, but he is challenging the proposed solutions and their impact, particularly on developing nations.
It's thought-provoking, for sure. He's urging us to think critically about who benefits from certain policies and who ends up bearing the costs.
And that leads us to the heart of the matter. Hodge's proposed solutions for revitalizing Nigeria's economy.
Oh.
He emphasizes the concept of abundance, not scarcity.
I like that. So where does he begin?
With energy, of course, Hodge challenges the prevailing narrative around fossil fuels. He argues that Nigeria needs to harness its oil and gas reserves, not shy away from them, to fuel economic growth.
So he's advocating for using the resources they already have rather than being limited by external pressures or ideologies.
Precisely. He sees abundant, cheap energy as the key to unlocking Nigeria's industrial potential. And from there, Hodge goes on to another area where he kind of challenges conventional wisdom.
Okay.
It's his critique of the International Monetary Fund's approach to development.
He's not a fan of their reliance on aid, is he?
Not at all. He argues that true economic empowerment comes from creating wealth.
Right.
Not relying on handouts.
Okay.
He sees the IMF's focus on aid as a way to maintain control and perpetuate dependency.
So instead of aid, what does he propose?
Infrastructure development. He believes that investing in power grids, transportation systems, communication networks, these are the foundations for a thriving economy. Hodge even suggests exploring alternative funding sources like BRICS.
Okay.
That are more aligned with this vision of infrastructure-driven growth.
BRICS, that's the group of emerging economies. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
Yeah.
It sounds like Hodge is advocating for a more multipolar world.
Yes.
Where power and resources aren't concentrated in the hands of a few.
That's a great way to put it. He sees BRICS as a potential partner for nations seeking to break free from the constraints of the traditional global financial system. Now, this is where things get really interesting. Hodge proposes a rather radical approach to financing these ambitious development projects.
Okay.
He draws a historical parallel to Abraham Lincoln's strategy during the American Civil War.
This is where he talks about bypassing the banks and printing sovereign currency, right? I'm curious how he addresses the concerns about inflation.
Yeah, it's a valid concern. But Hodge argues that inflation isn't necessarily caused by printing money. He believes it's a result of insufficient productive capacity. So if the newly created currency is invested wisely in infrastructure and industry, the resulting economic growth would offset any inflationary pressures.
So it's like, create the wealth first, then back it up with the currency. It's a different way of thinking about economics.
Exactly. It's a departure from conventional wisdom. But Hodge believes it's essential for breaking free from the cycle of debt and dependence. And he doesn't stop there. He also challenges the current model of globalization.
Okay.
Specifically when it comes to trade.
Yeah, he's not buying into the free trade is always good mantra.
Right. He uses historical examples like the Roman Empire to illustrate how powerful nations can exploit weaker ones under the guise of free trade. Hodges argues that so-called free trade agreements can benefit dominant economies at the expense of developing countries.
It's like a rigged game. You're playing with a stacked deck.
Precisely. So instead of this uneven playing field, what does Hodge suggest? He advocates for bilateral trade agreements.
Okay.
Direct deals between two sovereign nations where they negotiate terms that are mutually beneficial,
right,
without the interference of global institutions.
So cutting out the middleman and giving more control to the individual countries involved.
Exactly. And he extends this idea to currency as well.
Mm-hmm.
He argues that nations shouldn't be forced to trade in a particular currency like the U.S. dollar,
right,
but should have the freedom to use whatever currency works best for their bilateral agreements.
This resonates with his overall theme of economic sovereignty.
Yes.
It's about empowering nations to chart their own course.
Absolutely. And that leads us to another key aspect of Hodge's vision, the importance of stronger relationships among African nations.
Okay.
He sees collaboration and unity as essential for resisting external exploitation and building a more prosperous future for the continent.
This is where he brings up the example of the European Union, right?
Yep.
But he has a word of caution about that model.
He does. He acknowledges that the EU's initial goal was to promote peace and cooperation. However, Hodge argues that it ultimately evolved into a bureaucratic behemoth that eroded national sovereignty. He's not advocating for a United States of Africa with a centralized government calling all the shots.
So what does he propose instead?
He envisions a network of sovereign African nations cooperating for mutual benefit while maintaining their independence.
Okay.
He calls it a sovereign alliance. It's about finding a balance between collaboration and independence.
Strength through unity, not domination.
Exactly. And this ties into his belief that true empowerment doesn't come from relying on a savior leader.
Right.
It comes from the active participation of the people.
He really stresses the importance of education, awareness, and grassroots involvement as crucial for building a just and sustainable society.
It's a call to action. Hodge is challenging people to take ownership of their future. He's saying, don't wait for someone else to fix things. Get involved, get informed, and make your voice heard.
This is a powerful message,
mm-hmm,
especially coming from someone who, like Hodge, dedicated his life to empowering others through education and faith.
It definitely adds a layer of authenticity to his arguments. It's clear that this isn't just theoretical for him. It's deeply personal.
And on that note of personal conviction, there's one more piece of Hodge's argument I want to explore. He talks about the need for a more decentralized approach to education.
Okay.
One that's driven by the people, not just the elite or established institutions. This idea of people-driven education really piqued my interest. It seems to align with his overall theme of empowering individuals and communities.
Absolutely. Hodge argues that true education should equip people to critically evaluate information, question narratives, and form their own conclusions based on evidence and reason.
So it's about breaking free from what he calls approved education, which often serves the interests of those in power.
Right. He even uses the example of New Zealand's government claiming to be the sole source of truth during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
Which Hodge finds both absurd and dangerous. He believes in a marketplace of ideas where truth emerges through open dialogue and debate, not from top-down pronouncements.
It reminds me of that old saying, question everything. Hodge seems to encourage that kind of intellectual independence.
He does. And he extends that skepticism to the influence of large corporations. He argues that these entities often prioritize profit and control over the well-being of people and the planet.
So we're talking about media conglomerates, big tech companies, pharmaceutical giants,
yeah,
those kinds of players.
Exactly. He's urging people to be critical consumers, to question motives, and to support alternatives that align with their values. It's about recognizing the power we have as individuals to make choices that shape the world around us.
This all ties back to his vision for a more decentralized and participatory society. He even talks about policy decisions flowing upward from the grassroots, not just from the top down.
Right. He envisions a system where communities and local organizations have a real say in shaping policies that directly affect them. Hodge sees this as a way to create a truly democratic and responsive government.
It's an interesting concept, but it requires an informed and engaged citizenry, people who are willing to step up and make their voices heard.
That's the key. Hodge believes that apathy and complacency are the biggest obstacles to progress. He calls for a revival of civic engagement, urging people to get involved in their communities, hold their leaders accountable, and work together to build a better future.
This is where his own life story becomes so inspiring. He could have easily stayed in the world of high finance, but instead he chose a path of service, working alongside figures like Bishop Idahosa, and ultimately establishing a Bible college to train future leaders.
He embodies the principles he advocates for. He's not just talking the talk, he's walking the walk.
Right. It's a powerful reminder that change doesn't happen overnight. It requires dedication, perseverance, and a willingness to challenge the status quo.
And that brings us to Hodge's final message, which is one of hope. He believes that a better world is possible, not through grand pronouncements from on high, but through the collective efforts of everyday people working together to build a more just and equitable society.
Well said, Kent Hodges. Industrializing Nigeria. Releasing Nigeria's energy. It's a thought-provoking read. It challenges us to rethink our assumptions about economics, globalization, and the role of the individual in shaping a nation's destiny.
It's definitely a call to action. Hodge urges us to question, to learn, and most importantly, to get involved.
He reminds us that we all have a part to play in creating a more prosperous and independent future, not just for Nigeria, but for all nations striving to break free from systems of control and exploitation.
It's a powerful message that resonates far beyond the borders of Nigeria. It's a message for all of us.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it insightful and perhaps even inspiring.
Until next time, keep questioning, keep learning, and keep pushing for a better world.